Blog Talk Radio.
A bit of a late start, but we are here. We are here. Welcome to Real Radio, where we are radio established to address life. Today, we'll be broadcasting without one of our favorite voices here on the airwaves, but we still have the same actionable information, current information, and so there is lots to be understood and learned today. I'm here with Brother Thomas Berry. Brother Berry, you here with me?
Oh, yeah, I'm in the building. What's up?
Hey. We got 12 watching the house. And I do believe later on we will have Mr. Rodney out of Vegas joining us. I do believe I saw that in the works. All right, well, we have had a ridiculous week of news. Of course, we've had still ever more shootings, right, Barry? But not only that, Mother Earth herself is acting up. We have earthquakes and whatnot all over the planet that are causing extreme mass casualty. And we don't listen to that kind of news a lot here in the United States. We kind of focus mostly on whatever's happening to us, unless we are actively doing something abroad. But the planet is actually shifting and changing quite seriously right now, where we're having whole starvation. We have more than one starvation and famine event happening in Africa right now. And like I said, the earth is shaking right up under the feet of many Indian people, causing them to have mass casualty. And so it's important, Brother Berry, that we keep our eye not just on this beautiful patch of land we have, if ill-gotten gains we have gotten from the natives, but we have to watch how we are existing in relation to the rest of the world,
Yeah, no doubt. I think the one thing is that everything is tied together. I've been doing a lot of research this week, thanks to my AC being out. I've been dealing with this heat, so I've been up late night doing.
Thank you, brother, studying.
There's informational dives, and you know they've shown where you know there's a earthquake on one side of the planet and it impacts the other side of the planet. So we are tied together in a lot of ways that we may not necessarily see physically, but the earth does feel it. I would say that, you know, right now what we're seeing is a change of the ages. And some of the things that I saw, and we've had this conversation on here, so I don't want to go too deep into it, but and this planet has had many, many a makeovers, and it's a lot older than what they give it credit for. Part of the reason that they typically don't know, as they're finding out, the pyramids are a lot older than what they originally thought they were, but they don't have the technology to do a chronology of stone. So they can only go by natural things like plants or things of that nature, right? So this planet is going to keep going. We keep on saying the end of the world. No, it's typically not the end of the world. It's the end of human inhabitants, the way that we currently inhabit it. So the planet, just like your body, when your body feels like it has too much disease or too much of an ailment, the body just shuts down, right? It kills the spirit out of the body. The planet is the exact same way. They say when they say God made us in his image or her image, that's the exact same thing with the planet. You know, everything that our bodies represent, you know, look at the water mass in your body compared to the water mass of the planet. And we can go on through there and we can show you the similarities that we have. So just keep in mind, we got to treat this planet good if we want to sustain and be around for a while and keep this way of life going. And if we don't, we're going to start seeing a lot more natural disasters happen.
Well, it's funny you should lead us into water. Well, you know, even though this planet is 70+%, but I looked today, not today, earlier this week, and do you remember when Japan had that nuclear reactor meltdown about 10 or so years ago? Are you familiar with that? Well, they have been holding on to some of the fallout of that nuclear event, and they are interested, Japan is interested, in asking the rest of the planet if it's okay to take that waste into deep ocean territory and to slowly dissipate that waste water from the nuclear fallout into the deep ocean incrementally. And so things are happening, Brother Barry, in other nations seemingly so far away, but the impacts, right? What's going to happen when Japan releases that water? They have to, right? They have to do something with it. It's a shit ton of nuclear waste, okay? All right? And they've just been holding on to it like they have been in punishment for creating it. And they would like to be able to get rid of their waste like all the other failed reactor, you know, owners have been able to do. And because we are at this heightened awareness of what the planet is up to, and like you said, Brother Barry, what's the quality of life we're going to be able to continue to have for this amount of time, this ticking clock amount of time we have left to inhabit this planet, what kind of quality of life are we going to have if we are allowing nations to even slowly dissipate nuclear waste into oceans and whatnot like that and leak chemicals into active running, you know, waterways throughout cities? What are we eventually going to have, you know? But there's no pro or con to it because something has to be done. There's no other planet, right? And, you know, I don't mean to spin this to a comical thing. I just want to ask you, because I was talking to my son about this the other day, and he looked at me like I was crazy. But, Brother Barry, why we don't shoot that stuff into space? Why don't we take this crash? Like, okay, no, I'm not trying. I know. See, now you're laughing. But look, there is a finite amount of Earth. Will you agree? Earth is okay. And so if we have stuff on this planet, and space, as we understand it, is quite vast. Why are we not taking this detrimental stuff like nuclear fallout from Japan or whatever, creating a payload for it on some rocket, and shooting that shit off into space? I mean, I know it sounds like, what are you talking about, lady, but why is this so far-fetched an idea?
Well, I would say part of the reason why they would not shoot it, you know, they wouldn't do it in outer space in that way, is that they feel as if they that's the route they take, then they know that most of their sightings for UFOs have been around those areas. Typically, that's where the UFOs hover around. So it's a galactic idea that, you know, that I'm pretty sure that there's some things that we don't know about that they have treaties on. So it might not be best for them to do that. Secondly, I think that part of the issue that they have, and even like with Japan, I think the Japanese are trying to figure out, okay, so if we could into outer space, right, how does it hover over the Earth? Will you shoot it at? Where do you shoot it to? What is it going to do with the impact of the entire, you know, the entire atmosphere? How does it come back down to the planet, or does it just linger? And do you want to make the Earth into a trash can?
Because, see, I'm like, you find a coordinate, right? The coordinate with the most dark space, no light, right? And you wait up to realign up with it, and you put all this stuff that is making you have, like, three-headed babies on the planet, and just shoot it on off. And you do it every, I don't know, you do it every 100 years. Every 100 years, you gather up all the stuff that you know is killing, all the organophosphates that is killing the nuts. They can't pump it into the water no more. They got to pump it into these barrels. We ship the barrels to, where do they shoot the rockets out? Is that Cape? We shoot the barrels off to wherever they shoot the rockets off to. And then we get to all breathe for about 99 years, you know?
I think that there's more technology that we are not being made aware of. I was just looking at some stuff about how inside of the rainforest, outside the Amazon rainforest, how those Native Americans were able to take land, I mean, take compost and other things, and do an advanced man-made version of fertilization of the ground. So they had man-made soil that still exists in the Amazon to this day that is not natural soil. And so that the technology piece is that we just have to be diligent on creating an absorbent that's healthy for the universe for that nuclear energy. You know, that's part of the problem with the nuclear piece. It's such a temper tantrum type weapon, where you just destroy everything in his wake, such mass destruction. And, you know, you would have to say, well, why would someone want to use that to obliterate everything, wildlife, plants, you know, people? Why would you want to drop that, something that's going to have something that's just like God awful for the next 100 years? Why do we even need an energy source like that, right? Like, why do we need that when there's so many other things that we could be inventing? And it's just pretty much power and money. But they should be, the Japanese, outside of our country this morning, I apologize. The Japanese They are known for their inventions. They are known of, you know, after Hiroshima, how they took a lot of things and re-engineered them to make it better. I would hope that they would spend their time, instead of trying to figure out how to throw it into the ocean, creating some type of container or some type of anti-nuclear substance that could choke it up. That would probably be the better thing, better way to go.
Well, we all going to have to figure something out because, you know, they said that clock, you've heard about the doomsday clock, right? The clock where we start looking at, you know, how much time, like you told us earlier, how much inhabitable time do we have left based on, you know, how fast we are ruining and burning through resources, right? And we all learned about this. I do believe it's called the algorithm of function of natural reproduction or something, where they showed you how all animals, they multiply up until they begin to have to have too scarce resource in order to survive. And then that mm-hmm. brings their productions down for a long time, or a mass event happens to either the things they prey upon or the predator above them, and then that has a profound effect on the growth rate, the developmental rate, the reproductive rate of that said species. And so we've had enough events, in my opinion, on this planet for us to reasonably, if we weren't as intelligent as we are human, we should be less numbers between Black Plague and famine events and, you know, just mass casualty events, whatnot. There have been enough times when this planet has tried to bring its numbers down, bring its human animal numbers down, you know, so that the resource is not totally depleted. And I know it sounds crazy probably to talk about the planet as if it was a human or as if it had its own independent thought. But because that's how systems work, even if there's no system operator, once you get symbiotic relationships where things are growing and developing in relationship to each other, it begins to work as a functional unit. And it is our behavior, our intellectual behavior as humans that has made this planet not as healthy as it should be, even though the planet is doing everything it should in order to keep those numbers down, you know, everything, including upping its fungal count. Most people don't know that the planet is almost doubling in its fungal spores right now. The Earth is actually trying yet another way to get, you know, some populations down. What it's doing is it's pumping more energy not into the resources that humans use the most, but the resource that we actually fear most or that we do our best to avoid. Very few of us eat like mushrooms and stuff like that, even with this whole vegetarian movement. But the amount of fungal spores and fungus just available everywhere on the planet has become an actual problem for like produce. It's become a problem for in scientific areas, being able to carry out science without these spores carrying themselves in on human flesh and human hair, on our clothes, in our fingernails, on your very eyelid, eyelashes. So there are tactics being used by this planet. Some it don't even know it's using. The movement of those tectonic plates, Brother Barry, is what it is. But some of this, I do believe the planet, things like virus proliferation, right? A lot of people mm-hmm. think these are man-made, you know, laboratory viruses, but not all are like that. Some of them Mother Earth has decided to create. you know, the opportunity was there. And so we have these population correcting viruses is what some people would think of them as. But it's, we're too smart, Brother Barry. We're so smart, we know how to create a vaccine for it in less than a year, right? And, or something that looks like a vaccine, even if it don't completely work like one. So we're going to have to be real smart, Brother Barry, on what we do individually to keep the quality of life right on this planet. What are you doing personally? What do you do to be conscientious of your carbon footprint and what's happening with your overall environment?
Well, I belong to a group which is called the Environmental Justice, the EJCC cohort, community cohort. And so I was just inside of Milwaukee for a One Water Summit inside of September. So I've been adamant about this for the past 2 years and knowing exactly how. And we had a person in who gave us a great segment because I have an electric lawnmower because I didn't want to get a gas lawnmower. And we have some environmentalists who came in and they talked to us and they told us about being careful about how we go about this carbon footprint thing, because there's some things that we need and there's some things that we don't need. And I can tell you, I try with my electric lawnmower. It takes me twice the time to cut my grass with the electric lawnmower than it would with a gas lawnmower. Also, how much energy do I use charging that battery for the electric lawnmower? In some aspects, you may need gas because the electric won't do it. If you got over 15 acres of land, you won't need a gas lawnmower. So it's all about knowing when to use certain resources and when not to use certain resources. And the main thing for me, Sister Rashi, to answer your question, is to never overconsume or overuse. So I don't just run water inside of the house just for the sake of running water when I'm about to take a shower or when I'm washing dishes. I just make sure that I'm careful in the resources that I take. I make sure that I try to, you know, I try to finish my bottle of water now. So I try not to throw bottled water away. I'm trying to get out of even using bottled water, to be honest, because I learned that at the One Water convention, is that we don't need bottled water as much as we think, especially here in the Twin Cities. We have pretty good water coming out of our faucets, some of the best water in the country compared to other places. So we don't need bottled water. And, you know, it all carbon and, you know, overusing the resources, it's all tied together. We have a consumption issue in the United States. We overconsume, and part of that, sister, is because overconsumption is a sign of wealth.
And people don't know, like a 30-minute shower, that's overconsumption, right? It's hard to explain overconsumption to people because they're like, what are you talking about? It's just my normal life. I try to explain to people, whatever you bought, if it wasn't McDonald's is one meal, an overpriced one meal. But if you go somewhere else, they have given you two meals. They have given you two meals for the price of one. You have just learned to eat both meals at one time. It's very important for people to know when they are eating more than they need, when they're buying clothes that are overpriced. And it's possible, even within these days of sweat shopping, to just buy a $50 T-shirt is overconsumption, unless it is a T-shirt in support. Just the T-shirt is not right. It has to be affiliated with it's a donation. You understand? It's an exchange for a donation to an organization who needs $50. But an actual T-shirt is not worth $50. And when you're buying stuff that's not worth the trade, when you're engaged in activities that cost more than they should, you understand? Then you are overconsuming. And it is until we collectively say, hey, that's just too much. Like, is there anything Americans won't buy, Brother Barry? Like, speaking of too much, Are you familiar with your girl, Dania Jackson, Derrick Jackson and Dania Jackson? She's a young lady. The wife just came out of, you know, that she's now ready to give classes for two payments of $3,500. She'll teach you how to get out of your unhappy marriage for $7,000. And this is what I'm talking about. Somebody's going to pay her, though, because the concept of overconsumption goes over America. It just is not something we can understand. And it's as basic as, man, it can get quite deep. It can get quite deep. You know, I know people who buy orange juice and then pour half and half and then mix it with water because the actual orange juice we get, the juice we get is too strong, it's too sweet. We need to be doubling that. It's almost like concentrate. You understand? But we don't understand that because our palate, the concept of overconsumption is what I'm trying to explain, Brother Barry. And it's so deep that most people can't quite grasp it. They know they're doing it when they buy a Ferrari or a Maserati. When you buy a mansion and it's two people in the house, that's consumption. They understand it then, right? When you're doing bottle after bottle after bottle at the club, they hear that as overconsumption. But they can't hear that when you eat more meat than is in a deck of cards. You know a deck of cards, right? That's all the meat you need in a day.
Well, you don't even need that much meat.
You don't even need that much meat. You don't even need that much meat, right? But if you are carnivore, omnivore, that deck of cards is it. Now, if we try to get people to hear that deck of cards is it, that's all you'll meet for today, they like, what the fuck, what are you talking about, Brother Bear? What are you talking about? They can't conceive
it. But that goes back to the consumption piece and about status. So I was having a conversation with my grandmother about when she was growing up and meat. And what she was telling me was that they only ate meat about twice a week. And most of the time they had beans, they had rice. Macaroni and cheese was not something that you would have meat with. It would be a dish all into itself. It would be a supplement for meat, right? That's how we got introduced to macaroni and cheese in our community. But once the United States government started subsidizing farming and they started putting money into the farms, then the meat began to circulate, and that's when we started having more meat in our diet because the government was already investing a bunch of money into meat. And so that's how our diet became full of meat. That's how the FDA started to implement a lot of nutrient guidelines based off of the investment that the government was putting into farms. And so that's how we got here. So in this country, we weren't always heavy meat eaters. And once again, it's another sign of status. Poor people couldn't afford meat. Rich people could. And that's why people eat the meat today. Another thing that I would say is that, you know, even the meat that we eat with all of the preservatives and all of the unhealthy things that are put into the feed that people are eating, you know, when we had butcher shops in this country, we were a lot more leaner as well, and we ate less meat at that time too because the butcher could tell you what's good meat, what's bad meat, what's a good cut, what's a bad cut, and the butcher would be able to tell you, you know, better ways for your diet. We got rid of that. We go into the freezer aisle in the grocery store and we're picking up meat. We're picking up other processed foods. So we don't have those experts around telling us like we once had. And that wasn't too long ago. You know, I was born in 77. So in the 80s, I saw butchers. In the early 90s, I saw butchers. And we've gotten away from butchers and butcher shops in our communities. But I tell you, if we wanted to really lower that consumption of meat, if we wanted to lower our consumption of intake, we would have those people around a lot more. It's just one of those things, Sister Rashi, where, you know, we talk about our palate and we talk about our diet as if people are almost doing it themselves. But a lot of it is because of some of the manipulating that took place on a medical level where people go into the doctor and the doctor's telling you that you need cow milk for your bones to be strong, and that's not true. Or telling you that you need certain foods, you know, like salad. We're in this idea that if you eat a salad, it's healthy. Well, iceberg lettuce has no nutrients.
It's worthless. It's worthless,
right?
Exactly.
You
that's
know,
right.
Green olives are a mutation of black olives. It has no nutrients in it. Cauliflower has no nutrients in it. I hear vegans saying, yeah, I have the cauliflower XYZ. Well, cauliflower is nothing but bleached broccoli. So if you're having cauliflower anything, it does not have nutrients in it because cauliflower does not have nutrients. And so you can be vegan and still be unhealthy at the same time. You might be better off just getting leaner meat, better meat in that way. Yes, sir.
Well, that's not the only thing, right? How many outfits you got, Brother Barry? How big is that closet full of clothes? Because at some point, we're doing that too. That's just, even if you're going to the thrift store, like I do, you don't need more than, what, 10 shirts? 10 shirts? Mm-hmm. What, 10 pair of pants? 12? What you need? 30 pair of underwear, a pair a day maybe? What you need? What, 10, 20 pairs of socks at most? If you got, I mean, when do we say we got too many clothes? When do you realize that you have bought one too many garments? You understand? And don't let's get us started about electronics. I'm a poor person with at least 4 different pieces of electronics, okay? And so I know actual homeless people with a cell phone. You understand? So what when do we realize, how do we not see that we are consuming ourselves into oblivion? How is that not a message? Stop buying, stop buying, stop buying.
Because how often have we told anybody
not to buy something?
Well, that's because we only speak one language in this country, and that's English. I'm talking about us African Americans, Adolf's folk. We only speak one language, and that's English. And I've said this for a while, the fact that English is our main and only language, it makes us the number one consumers in the country, because people who speak other languages, and English is their second language, they don't pay attention to as much advertisement as we do. The other thing is, more we assimilate into the culture of whiteness, we used to be the people that would be the last to go buy the new TV. We would be the last to go buy the new car. We'd be the last to go buy the new furniture, because for us, we thought it was wasteful spending. And even though that the leg on our furniture was broken, we'll go find a brick, and we'll put that thing up on a brick. We didn't mind. Remember, we used to be the people that had the TV sitting on top of the TV that was sitting on top of the TV, right?
The small color TV sitting on top of the big-ass black and white console.
Right. So that's when we were more inside of a mind of, we didn't feel like we arrived. This arrived mindset that we have today is detrimental because it just makes us consumers. So in order to feel equal to the dominant culture, we feel like we have to overconsume. So that's the thing. Now, I will say this about clothes. I'm just going to be full transparent. My mother was a booster when I was a kid, so I have a fetish for clothes. My closet is colorful and it's plentiful. Nothing but Ralph Lauren. I ain't going to front to you. I ain't going to lie to you. And I got to have to match everything that I got on. Okay? I match it.
And then look who you align yourself with as far as, you understand?
Hey, listen,
I was with you even with the color and shit, because I love me some color. But you aligned yourself with his old ridiculous ass. Okay, well, this is what I'm saying. But actually, Ralph Lauren, because I'm into fashion, he's one of the smarter ones to go with, because he understands, at least, he ain't no fucking retarded ass, you know, Gucci or doing that. You know what I'm talking about. He's still ready to sell to the average man. His is a $35 T-shirt. You know, instead of a $135 T-shirt. It's still ridiculous because it's just a white T-shirt with a little bit of embroidery on it. right there by Hart Park with a little man on a broke down horse. But it's still affordable, and if you wear that somewhere, they'll know, okay, he's trying. I remember trying. I was like, ooh, because I like fashion. Do you know a Giorgio Armani? I almost tried to find him and slap the shit out of him. Man, are you playing? The neck was all high. The stitch was tight. Then I realized later on, who is making these things? Who's being actually tasked with creating this item? You understand? Not the visual concept in some off subset designer's mind, because Armani don't do all, you know, those high up designers, they don't do all the clothes. They hire their favorite think tank designers, and they go with the pick the ones they like the most. So you have to remember the culture of what you're buying into. Am I buying a 12 watch t-shirt for $25, where he paid $5 for the t-shirt and 20 is going to go into the organization, the 12 watch? Or am I buying a $135 t-shirt from a dude who would prefer it not actually even be on me, honestly?
Mm. Well, that's a great question. That's a great question. I would say for me, I was pretty much drawn to that based off of the color scheme. And for me, it wasn't necessarily about the brand. It was about color scheme. And when our manufacturers or the companies that we were drawn to in the early 2000s, late 90s, when they start selling their brands like Fat Farm or Sean John, et cetera, Rockaware, we were left with a void. You know, we had no more Carl Canal. We had no more Fubu.
That's what I was saying. Who's our new dude? We don't have no new dude.
Because our celebrities and entertainers, and it started once the NBA made their fashion rule against the players. That hurt a lot of those. But think about it, Sister Rashi. If you tell a group of millionaires that's wearing Fat Farm, Rockaware, Sean John, Carl Kanai, FUBU, that they can no longer wear those brands walking into the arena along with their jewelry, hey, they're going to stop spending the money that they were spending to show how fresh they were walking into the arena. Secondly, those companies are not going to be able to advertise their brands. So that's a rippling effect and impact on Black culture. And that took place in the early 2000s when they were trying to get rid of the Allen Iverson or the AI image. So that's what happened with a lot of the fashion brands. It was a rule that was, and this is why we talked about the planet and how everything is tied together. When you don't have the type of dollars that you get from these young NBA players, that money is going to fashion designers overseas. That's why these brothers are wearing purses. That's why they're wearing a tight clothes the way that they do. That's not typical urban American culture. You know, that's why 50 Cent, I heard him state, that's why he stopped making clothes. And he was saying that he doesn't understand why we're trying to dress like people overseas. He said, because we've always been the fashion statement, you know, and I don't have time. And if you watch how he dresses, he still dresses the same. But I'm of that mindset, too, of this way that these young men are dressing. You know, it's a little feminine, a little too feminine for my liking. But that's why we lost a lot of our manufacturers. And we don't have anyone else trying to dive in because it's not cool to look like us anymore. We made that uncool.
Well, while you were, man, that concept of the effemination, the idea that because fashion is always played, I've never had the money for it. It's like fashion for me is like pornography. I can't explain it or make it, but I know it when I see it. You know what I'm saying? I have always been like the way we express ourselves on the outs, because we can't do naked. Well, we used to couldn't do naked shit. We can do naked now. But before, when we had to have something, what you had was such an it was almost who you were identifying with, what set you with. And it played into my life most when I went to high school, Brother Barry. Because I went to a performing arts high school, we did not have uniforms. And I wore, for the most part, traditional West African clothes. And it became, I've been called an African booty scratcher. But
we've all been called that.
No, I don't know if we all been called that. But
those were the jokes back in the day. I was called that plenty of times.
Well, once you identify with Africana, it takes on its a whole new life. You get legs, let me say, when you become identifying with Africa. And so my aesthetic has always been Africana. I mean, I was just raised a certain way, and it's made sense. The more I delved into African studies, African ideology, it was like, yeah, this is kind of like who I am. And so it's nothing to see me in African print. It's nothing to see me with, like you said, those bright, vibrant colors, and even the traditional, you know, way African women look with the either the Arab-looking straight dress or the one with the fantail. I wear that shit. So when you start talking fashion and how it makes other people identify you as, it may not even 100% be who you are. You may just be a person who likes to wear different kind of clothes. But when other people see you, they say, oh, he's this kind of dude, right? He's this kind of dude. He's if you have on tennis shoes and a blazer, they'll say he's business, but he's an urbanite. If you have on a lot of leather and gold chains and shit, they might assume, you know, that you into the nightlife, I call it. You into the dark life, the nightlife. And if you have on all them damn feathers, Brother Barry, and you have on a mesh shirt, and you have on one of them, I call them skorts, where it's a pair of pants with the little skirt over the top, and you a man, they may assume that you are, non-binary is the word they say now instead of just punk-ass gay nigga. That's what our grandpas and them called them. But we can't call them that, Brother Barry. We call them non-binary.
Who comes up with these names? I'm trying to figure out the names. I mean, as a man, as a heterosexual black man in America, I feel like I've been left out of a meeting of describing and discussion of things. And we didn't get a vote. Like,
well,
I don't like the idea.
We don't get a vote for color to Negro. We didn't get a vote from Negro to black. I don't remember voting on going from black to African American. So there are going to be strides, right? Social strides. And one of them
You remember going from black to African American? So from Negro to black, that was a part of the Black Power movement. We wanted to become black because black is a power, you know, just like being white in this country. They only have two races, as I stated before. It's either you black or you white. So if you're going to be on the opposite side of fighting white supremacy, you have to be black, right? That's where the Black Power movement came in. The idea from going from black to African-American, that was Jesse Jackson and Raymond Push during his presidential run. They started the phraseology African-American, and the reason why was because some of the polls that they were doing is if you use the term black, white people had a negative reaction to the term black. So African-American was a softer way to say that you were black so that he could try to win polling numbers if he'd been stuck with it since the 80s. That's how we arrived at African-American.
Okay.
I'll share it with you inside of the group chat, man, some of the stuff about, you know, African-American versus black. So that's all we got there.
So let me explain then how we get away from punk to and fag and I don't know. I guess because I'm on the other side of the spectrum as a woman capable of loving all people, I'm not privy. Like they always call, you know, bulldaggers, but that's a particular type of lesbian. Or, you know, they don't have a lot of terminology for women for real as much as they do for men who are capable of loving on a non-heterosexual spectrum. So we get away from fag and punk and bitch ass nigga. I don't know all the names, brother. Y'all know them, but I don't. And we move on to words like non-binary, meaning that because non-binary simply means that you don't subscribe to being either a man who just likes women, or even for real to a man who just likes men. When you are non-binary, what you're saying is, I can't think about people just based on their gender. I can't decide whether or not I like you just because you are a man or a woman. That's not what begins it. It's like having someone you care about be a man or a woman. It's like, do they name start with an A or not? It doesn't matter. It's like presence. If there's a person, there's a character that they hold, there's an entity within them, and that attracts you as a person, and you can see, and this is my spiritual self talking, you can see the light in their eyes, and you can see a mirror of yourself within them, and you just grow to be attracted to these people based on their humanness, their matter. And if that matter is fat, it's just like, oh man, it's a whole lot of it, but I like it. And if it's somebody who's not quite as intelligent as you would want them to be, you deal with it. You grow, you say, I'm going to be that beacon of enlightenment for the person that I love. And if they happen to be, you know, unfortunately insane, even you say to yourself, because people love insane people, you say to yourself, I'm going to try to be the beacon of the poster of truth for them. When they feel like everything else is not real, I'm going to try to be their real. That's how that bonding process does not care about gender. It does not care about the idiosyncrasies of the human. It only cares about fundamental bonding. And I have to say, you have to have it once in your life if you've never had it. If you've never loved someone in spite of yourself, Brother Barry, then you don't even know, you can't conceive of what I'm talking about. If everyone you've ever cared about had to meet a gender criteria, they had to meet an intelligence criteria, they had to meet a body health, fitness, I guess, criteria. You know what I'm talking about? If everyone in your life has had to conform to what you yourself like, then you don't even know what it means to just be like in love with someone and have to reconcile in yourself what you don't like about them or what you feel might not be right. You have to reconcile that somehow in order to have that time. Have you ever been there before? Have you ever loved beyond your reasoning?
Well, I think I'm a human being, but I don't think those things are synonymous. I think that especially inside of our community, we've been loving to everyone. We are the place where everybody goes who are considered the undesirable. So we've had to live amongst all of the undesirables. And I feel like sometimes when we talk about hate crimes and when it comes to the LGBTQ plus community, So we kind of forget a lot of times that those supposed hate crimes are involving men who are typically secretly engaging in gay relationships with one another. And so they are a part of that community, whether they are saying they are or they aren't. That's just who they are. Men and women who are typically not a part of it, do they support it? Probably not. Are there things that are said that are probably stereotypical? For sure. But let's be honest, amongst all of us in this country, all of us on this planet, anything that's new, any group that's different from the norm, they've all been subjected to those types of things. And there's been gay people who have used racial epithets towards other people as well. There were gay plantation owners. So it doesn't mean that
that's
your
right.
sexual orientation makes you a victim of anything, because you could have also been a victim. You could have been a victimizer or a predator as well. So I don't look at it from that aspect. I just think that people have to, and tolerance is one of the things that we all do with each other as a society. Tolerance just means that we can coexist, disagree, and we don't have to go to war. And I know people say, I don't want you to tolerate me. Well, you don't get to force people to love you either. And people may love people who are already homosexual or gay. They just may not decide they want to go to the pride parade. And that should be
right.
a part of their prerogative, because we may not want people that's going to show up that's gay in a certain way to the celebration of Juneteenth or Malcolm X Day. Or we may not want them to celebrate with us black, you know, like certain black events or what have you, based off of the idea of their sexual orientation comes first, or their gender comes first, right? If I celebrate
right.
Memorial Day, I don't have to say, as a black man, I'm proud as a black man to celebrate Memorial Day based off what the ancestors did. It's no, it's as black people, you know. So I understand where you're coming from, but I believe that we're probably the more tolerant type of people. We're also the most loving and welcoming group of people, because every immigrant group that comes to this country has had to live amongst us. Every different persuasion in each country had to live amongst us, and they've had safe passage among us as well. And one last point, I was watching a video where a white woman was sitting there talking to her son, and she asked him, if you get lost, what should you do first? And he said, go find a black man and let him know that I'm lost, and I'll be safe. And so I would say that we have always been a protector of folk, even if we don't understand where they come from, because the other side of it, this is our conservative side of our living. We're conservative to the point to where we say whatever happens in your bedroom is your business. As long as you're not putting it out there and disrupting what we're doing, and we're not disrupting what you're doing, we don't care what you do in your bedroom. That is your, that belongs to you.
Well, okay, and it's true. Nobody wants to know about the nitty-gritty of anybody's relationship. That's the truth. But I do need to have you hear that, because this is June, and June, you know what it is. It is Pride Month.
It's Black Men's Month, too, by the way. Black Men's Health Month, yeah.
It's Black who? Black Men's Health
Black
Month?
Black Men, yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for saying that, because I did not know we had a double-decker for June. Thank you for saying for Black, and I'll be sure to make sure that next week we have a Black Men's Health segment, okay? But because we're 3 days into Pride Month, I do need you to hear that, or I need our listeners to hear that Pride is for everyone. Just like he just said, there has been no ethnicity of people who have not lived amongst Africans and been able to thrive, live, and be happy and healthy amongst living with Africans and their descendants. And so just like that, just like the ability to include other ethnicities in your culture and make sure that they are okay, even if they're living on your soil, even if they're living in areas that have been wrongfully segregated off to your kind, like they say, get over there with your kind. Brother Barry, you are 100% right. The African American community has been extremely tolerant and accepting of every nationality. However, there is one group of people that has always had a stigma amongst, in my opinion, every ethnicity. I ain't trying to be funny. I don't know anybody other than ancient Greeks or whatever who created a safe space within the culture, within the population, for those who do not have same gender, you know, don't have the same idea of what a gender role should be. And I'm going to tell you, as a member, and it's hard for people to hear me say this because I have been married twice and I have children. I am a non-binary individual. I have had in my lifetime the ability to love, literally, not care for and be kind of into, but to have fallen in love with a person who looked very much like me, except with kind of like hazel cat green eyes. I'm not going to divest that much information, but I can't deny to sit there and ask a human to pretend like something is not happening in their reality is insane. And so what I'm trying to express out there into the world is there is no band of people, all the way to the San Pygmy Africans, to the Nordics of, you know, Upper Caucasia or whatever it is. I don't know. That's the whitest people I can conceive of, Swiss people. There are gay people in all of those. There are gay Chinese people. There are gay Indians. There are gay Native Americans. There is no people who do not turn out these individuals who cannot 100% identify with what people say is natural, man, woman, together, baby, which is either man or woman, which gets together. Okay, we got it. But to say that this phenomenon does not exist, it's just wrong. Just like you get people born with hyperintelligence, you get people born with less than sustainable intelligence, meaning they don't function in a way where they can take care of themselves. You get people born with six fingers. You get people born with four fingers. You get people born with all kinds of variations of the human genome. And I just need you to hear, Brother Barry, that the ability to love beyond your gender is somewhere in that variation coding. And we would be retarding our intelligence not to accept the fact that this variation exists in the human genome. I've seen it. Yes, it can be used for evil. Yes, there are homosexuals who prey upon the innocent, just like there are heterosexuals who prey upon the innocent. What I need for you, Brother Barry, honestly, just personally, to do is look at your life to see and make sure that you are not harming anyone by holding on to old ideology that people who do not do man-woman relations, typical like everybody else, right, that is something wrong, that they're not that they're different, but that is something wrong. Difference can't always be wrong, Brother Barry. Difference cannot be wrong because each of us are different in our own way. Even two twins, even triplets are different in their own way. So I need you to hear that spectrum of sexuality, right? That spectrum of gender relation. Who am I when I look in the mirror? Am I a man? Am I a woman? Am I some kind of hybrid? Do I relate to myself that way? Do I dress all feminine? Do I dress all masculine? Can I blend the two? That should be open to all of us to express ourselves. No person should say that's wrong, that difference is wrong. So I want you to look, Brother Barry, at yourself and say, when I'm looking at difference, have I already assigned it as wrong? as wrong? And if I have, what is that wrong? And if it's, hey, that's not man-woman relations that make a baby, you need to think, do we need another damn baby at 8 billion and climbing? Do we even need another baby? So,
well, let me say, I hear you, I feel you, but I think that wrong is subjective. And I don't believe that people should be necessarily believing that what other people think or don't think should be problematic for them. And that's part of the white supremacist trope of things, where everybody has to be, uniformly into the same thought. I believe that it's okay for people to be different. And there has always been, as far as we can tell in the European history tropes, a form of homosexuality that has been present. Does it exist in other ethnicities and cultures? Yes, it does. However, even amongst the European, because white supremacy is rooted in reproduction and their fear of being out-reproduced, I would take it that the other groups, their idea of reproduction is that is their strong suit in this race. And while we say that it's 8 billion people, most of those folks are in Asia, not in America. And how are we going
actually,
to
most
push
of those folks
forward?
Are in Africa. Most of those folks are African. Well, I have to make sure. Most people on the earth are African.
Okay, that's fine. But when we talk about my eternal life and my lineage living on, I have to make sure that just like my mother had me and I had my children and my children have children, so myself, my mother, my father, my grandmother, and all of us keep living on. So, you know, it's a part of the duty of what we do here. And I that's just my belief. Now, I don't believe that my beliefs should be co-opted because other people have their own beliefs. I believe that you should be free to practice the beliefs and the customs that you want as long as it doesn't impede on other people's beliefs and customs. I'm a firm believer of that because I don't believe that impeding thought or idea or debate is healthy for society. And we're in a part right now where people just say things based off of pseudoscience. No one is pretty much being questioned or being challenged. And when you do challenge them, the first thing they say, well, because it's not in the theory of academia that they control, that it may not be right. I have a good friend of mine who's a therapist, and I drive her crazy most days because I'm always talking to her. I know which way she's going to derive based off of the theories and the practices that she's been programmed to. But I'm always like, think outside of the box. Why must you think outside of the box? I know that there's a group of people inside of New Zealand that force their sons, the youngest boys, if they don't have a daughter, to be girls. They're forced to be gay. They're automatically denoted as the woman of the family, and they make them take hormone changers, et cetera, and they call them the daughter. I forgot the name of them, but they're actually doing a civil lawsuit against the government currently right now in New Zealand, as well as their parents, because they felt like they had been forced. They didn't have no choice in this matter. So it's a cultural custom. So there's a lot of reasons why we have what we have in this country.
I hear you.
And as well as the world.
The older daughter, Brother Barry, I hear you. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. So tolerance to me is the main thing, and not only tolerance, it's just accepting that people are going to be different. But you got to also accept, like myself, I'm pro-black, I love black women. Most of my friends, I would say 98% of the people I surround myself with, they have a significant other that's African-American. And so those who have white spouses, I'm not the person that they're probably going to invite to the dinner. They're not going to invite me to the cook-off, and I'm cool with that. I'm not going to change who I am just to make them comfortable. They don't need to change who they are to make me comfortable. If those are the choices that they made and that's the lifestyle that they're rolling with, then, hey, let's do it. Like, I'm like, more power to you. But I feel like we have to give people that space to live And also we got to give other people that space to express who they are, what they desire. And even if you have some skepticism, even if you have some type of criticism, let's not be judgmental.
Brother Barry,
mm-hmm.
you have never, you're not down with the swirl at all.
No, not at all. I want nothing white but a Cadillac, and I'm going to change and trade it in when it gets to me miles.
What you say, when that gets done, you're going to get it painted. I have battled with that my whole life in that, yes, as a what I would consider an omnisexual, there's no human. I mean, I have met white gentlemen. I've actually met a white lady that I considered, but I just could not quite. And because my historical, I have something called, like, I almost can feel the lashes on my back. That's how much I remember history. My historical reference is so strong that as much as I would like to say anybody, anywhere, like I could technically love anyone because of their inner light, right? There is still something embedded in me, Brother Barry. And I call it historical reference. That's the best I could explain it. And that even though I wasn't there, I can remember the struggle of black people like back in the day, you know, from 15, not 1619, but from 1500 something when the Spaniards brought us over or whatever, right? Or even from mm-hmm. before then when the I do that sometimes. Forgive me. My words don't always come out. Colonialists. Yes.
Okay.
Came to Africa. And they came. I can remember things that are not embedded, you know, in my actual brain from having lived it. I still know that we have a global issue. There is a worldwide African issue, whether you are in Spain or Switzerland, honestly, whether you are in actual Africa, especially North Africa, Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, whether you are in Japan or China, there is a global issue with the African and her descendants, right? And I have mm-hmm. to remember that when I get ready to be all lovey-dovey and exclusive of anybody in the world, or when I get ready to buy anybody's food or wear anybody's clothes or emulate my hair, like, I have to remember that there is a global disdain for the African and her children. Like, and every time we try to forget it, they do remind us. They choke us out somewhere, or they treat us like shit. You know, one of the most recent was when the Africans that were in the Ukraine tried to get out of the Ukraine when Russia came in. They were stranded, right, at the station trying to get their clearance, and they wouldn't clear them. They were like, whatever, you've been here this whole time, whatever. We're going to get real Ukrainians out before we get some, you know, dusty Africans out, right? And so that was what so they were sitting there in a train station or in a bus station or at the airport waiting on delegations from either their nation or some United Nations-based group to get them out of war-torn Ukraine, right? So mm-hmm. the idea that the African does not have love throughout the planet is real. The problem is I want to be free. I want to be free to have whatever emotion I have. I want to be free to see some Chinese lady across the airport from me and a conversation, fall in love, have her move to United States, us get a house. You understand? I want the freedom that is given to everybody else. And what you're telling me, Brother Barry, is I need to attenuate my life. I need to fix it so that I give some African lady that chance. I make sure that I don't buy nothing but certain type of food, certain type of clothes, I watch certain type of movies. You know, you want us Africans in America to fix our mindset right, so that we don't have all the options. We have the ones that are smart for our development in the future. And we don't always know, especially poor black people. We don't know how to make decisions that will, continue our power into the future. So how do you know? How is it you know, Brother Barry, what the poor nigga don't know? How do you know, do this, not that? Love her, not love him, not her. Love, wear this, not that. Eat these, not that. Drink this, not that. You understand? How would you know? What are you doing, Brother Barry, to align yourself best with making decisions that are prolonged, you know, the African diaspora? How would you know?
Well, I spend a lot of money in books and research and lectures and, you know, sitting down with a lot of these intellectual giants around the country and some internationals as well. And what I say is you just always go by best practices, and you also try to you just want to recreate better practices. I was talking to Wisdom last night, and we were having a conversation about, you know, I was telling her about a book she should write, and she got to telling me about a book she thought I should write. And I was telling her that, you know, because I was saying that I feel that during Reconstruction, what we missed about that period and not a lot of stories or movies have been talked about during that time for us as African Americans in this country, that Reconstruction is a love story all into itself. When after 1865, we started looking around the country for those lost loved ones who were sold to other plantations that we were either married to or they were our children or just family members. And that we kind of forget the levels of being told that we couldn't love each other in this country. We're so far removed from that now compared to our parents and our grandparents and great-grandparents who we call foolish. We don't remember that it was illegal for them to even call themselves husband and wife. That wasn't recognized on the plantation. That wasn't allowed. They had to get free for that to happen. And so to me, I feel like just how we talk about the vote and how we talk about how people died for the right for you to vote, it was also people who died for the right for you to marry people who look like you and for you to be able to birth children from that union and actually have those children within the confines of your home and not sold off to another plantation in another state hundreds of miles away. And so for me, that's the driving force for me. I don't think that I know per se. This is all about a belief. And I think everybody tries to drive down the lane to knowing. I don't say I know anything, but I do know that we kind of forget in this country that we were not able to be married to one another at some point. And it's not talked about. It's almost as if we have started to believe that these are always things that we had access to, and we have not. So just like I would tell you to vote, just like I would tell you to take advantage of education, as I would tell you to take advantage of all of those other freedoms, I would say, hey, man, you are free to be married to someone with the same lineage as you. You're able to reproduce with that person, and you're able to continue on. That is a factor. We died. We fought for that in 1865. They didn't give us anything. We fought for it. And so that's something that I feel like is very important. And I'm going to write this. I'm going to write a play first, and then I'm going to turn that play into an actual movie. And it's going to be based off of Reconstruction. So I'm going to start that process in the next few weeks while I'm still working on the app. As a downside, to develop the characters and other things. We'll try to get it going and have a playwright up in like about a year. So people can see what it looks like.
You use that chat box AI, you could be done tonight. You know what I'm saying?
You know what, though? I would tell you that I don't know if AI really knows exactly, you know, saying that they, you know.
No, they ain't programmed slavery into AI yet. They ain't AI don't understand that shit. Because it do not compute. That syntax error. As a machine, no machine could understand that. I bet you if we fed the concept of slavery into a cognitive machine, it'd say, no, see, what happens is the people with most people stop the other people from doing that, and it never happens. So AI will not understand. AI will not understand what happened to us. And our mission to civilize, literally civilize the band of, I've been thinking about the American experiment for a long time, Brother Barry, like how the concept of an America even begins. And you have to hear that what's happening in this country is not happening, has never happened before. And it's not happening anywhere else on the planet. America is its own.
Rashi, I'm gonna stop you on that and tell you what I found out this week. You ready for this? Are you sitting down?
Come with it, brother. But you always sit me down, brother. You always sit me down.
Do you know inside of the Grand Canyon, which is inside of the United States, they found ancient Egyptian artifacts?
I'm sorry, what's they say it again?
They, inside of the Grand Canyon, here in the United States, they found ancient Egyptian artifacts.
Who do I reference? Where do I go?
I'm going to send you the link to this show because I was blown away.
So I should be able to. No, let's do this because we believe in actionable work, right? So if I type in the word, I'm going to go to Google, right? And I type in Grand Canyon, right?
Egyptian artifacts.
And Egyptian, right?
Yep, artifacts.
Okay. Okay. Grand Canyon, the Smithsonian cover-up, ancient Egyptian and giants in the Grand Canyon. Okay?
Yep. And so I was sitting there checking that out, and I'm saying that we were actually in this country long before Columbus and even possibly longer than before the Native Americans, but probably long before the last ice age as well. And so I want to say that even though it sounds like it's experimental, the Egyptians had boats that were larger than the boats that the Europeans had. So keep that in mind, that we've already done all of this, and we've already, the so-called experiment per se, we've already
been
going
on longer than whatever. My 1519 is not an actual, it's not even close to the actual depiction of how long this particular man has been under flux. Okay.
Been under flux as well as the research, but they're saying it may go back hundreds of thousands of years with more advanced technology by humans than what the average European can grasp. Part of the problem is that the European has not written into that history, and they don't have a marker. So what they're doing is they're exaggerating all of the information that we're getting as if it's all new during the time that they were here. And that's part of the problem. So anytime we say it's never been done before, I'm like, well, I don't want to say it ain't never been done before.
Well, let's just say we don't have documents. We don't have ample documentation to show.
There we go. There it is.
Understood. Well, I will say this. I struggle with my Americanness, okay? And so, because I identify as an African on the inside. I'm an African who has found themselves in America, okay? Not fundamentally an African who should be in America because I am the eldest of the people to have ever been here. That doesn't resonate with me. I do not, You know how people who are stronghold to their Native American lineage, I got Indian in my family, is tattooed mm-hmm. on some nigga's chest somewhere. But I do not, I don't care how strong it is, I do not hold to my Native American heritage. And I know it's there, but I don't own it because to me it is secondary to my African lineage. You understand? It's secondary to the Africanness. So when people tell me you're talking about two sides of one coin, but you're actually talking about the same side of the same coin, but from different time aspects, I can't even grasp it. I'm going to have more than the Native American, than the Egyptian findings in the canyon. I'm going to have more than the African lady they found buried in Mexico. I'm going to have, for one, an acknowledgement of the actual people who think they have a separate lineage. I don't like claiming shit from people who have not claimed me. Find that many Native nations who are willing to admit that they have even distant African lineage. The Cherokee ain't on it. You understand? The Sioux, they don't believe it. The Lakota mm-hmm. Sioux do not believe they have African lineage. The Chippewa, the Kickapoo, you cannot get them to hearken back to Africa. And so since they have drawn a line in the sand of, like, I don't know, 10,000 years, 30, maybe 20,000 years, I have to accept that line in the sand and say, okay, if y'all Native, I'm going to keep with my African heritage, the one that my my genealogy expresses the most, right? Mm-hmm. And be done with it. So, but you're telling me that that's going to be a problem, that we have to address, in order for this to be right, we're going to have to address our Native lineage?
I wouldn't say that we have to address our Native lineage. That's not what I would say, because I think that part of the issues that we're having is that we're thinking that we have to address groups that don't address us. I think that first we need to bask in the idea of our greatness. As I said about our scholars, when I teach them that we created math and we created the sciences and the language, it takes a whole nother toll of how they feel about themselves, and it puts them on a level where they feel great about themselves. And I feel like our people are acting like people who don't know who they are. So first, we need to acknowledge us before we start talking about other people, right? Like, they already know who they are. If I go to the state of Minnesota and listen to another hearing where Native Americans breaking down not only their lineage, but what also the white folks did to them, they can tell it to you in detail. They got the dates. They got the time. They got exactly what happened. We don't have that. And we are the first ones that will sit up and say, if somebody comes out with a movie about slavery, we don't need another movie about slavery. But then when you ask us about what took place in slavery, many of us don't know. And so I don't want to hear that stuff because it's from people who don't necessarily know our lineage. So I don't want to mix it up with those people. I think we should know who we are, and I think we should embrace who we are and where we're from. But lastly, the other thing that I say is that, you know, those people who reject us, part of the reason why they reject us is because that's the only way they'll get the money. That's part of the government deal. Keep us out. Yeah, we'll give you these things, you know, just make sure black folks don't get it, right? Because white people don't see nobody else as their true adversarial partner. But they see us as adversaries.
Are you washing dishes? What are you doing? Are you washing dishes? What are you doing?
No. Oh, I ain't even washing nothing. I'm putting dishes up. That's what I'm doing. I'm sorry.
I can hear it so clear. I'm like, you're such a dutiful husband. Thank you for cleaning that dishwasher out so much. I really appreciate it because it'll just put a sit there. I can hear it so clear. I can't see shit, but I can hear it all. You're absolutely right. There has been a band of Native Americans who even though they can own some of their survival to African descendants joining their band. These would be the Seminoles. When it was time for them to receive cash payouts for that Trail of Tears and whatnot, what happened to them when they marched them out of Florida into Oklahoma, some of the tribesmen of the Choctaw and Chippewa decided that in order to get the money that they would disown and discontinue their relationship with those Africans who had fled enslavement and legitimately joined their band for more than a generation. They had bred and given birth within those tribes. They had functioned within the community. And so when they were given a chance to, one, relocate to Oklahoma and receive the stipend that they still receive today, they agreed to disassociate with those Africans that they had, you know, had received from enslavement in order to get that money and land in Oklahoma. So, yes, it is a part of the syndrome to disavow yourself of Africans and their descendants in order to get money. And they're not the first to do it. They won't be the last. Somebody else is going to do it. And for that very reason, it is smart, like you said, not to put all your eggs in the basket of another ethnicity and your bond with them in order to get social justice. Now, I need you to know, Brother Barry, that Kansas City has joined the reparations hunt, okay?
Really? When that happened?
Yes. We have our own Kansas City Reparations Coalition, okay? And there are 13 people, all right? And they are, some of them are council women, or council people, but most of them are members of the Kansas City community that are willing to go in and look at disparities in law, medicine, housing, education. You know, Neely Fuller's list, right? You know Neely
mm-hmm.
Fuller, right? Okay.
You know Neely Fuller.
So
that's my name.
We have 13 members of our community, and some, I don't know where they pulled them from. They got them out their booty. But most of them are pretty heavy hitters. We have a descendant of the Freedmen Alliance. We have some professors at our local university, okay? We have actual students that are within the Kansas City School District. We have a couple of religious leaders, okay? And so they're all coming together to assess our request in Kansas City, not St. Louis, not Greater Missouri itself, but in Kansas City ourselves. We have a 13-person coalition to assess reparations from the state of Missouri and or the country of the United States of America. And I have never been more excited in my entire life. What do you think?
I think it's great. I think that people should be pushing it. I had a disagreement with a brother of mine who's a good friend of mine, but he's a mayor of a town, and we had a big disagreement the other day because she was talking about folks don't care about history and reparations. And I laughed at him. I said, man, here you are a politician. And I said, and this is what's wrong with most black politicians. He said, what? I said, who do you think teaches the history class? He said, huh? I said, it's the civics teacher. You don't even get a chance to be a politician without the history of what's going on in the municipal that you're running for. You have to know the history of that, the culture of that town in order to run it. And everything that they're electing you on is things that happened in the past, right? If the last mayor was a good mayor, they would have kept him. But since she wasn't, and that's all past, you know, they said that, hey, we got a standard going back further than her that we need. So that's why they elected you. And that's the same thing with reparations. We have to always be mindful that it is a good fight. Matter of fact, it's such a good fight that I can tell you the talking points that it was used in rebuttal to most of the arguments you would run across from whites as well as some black folks, that you would make them just pretty much have to say that they just don't like niggas. That's what you really wanted to boil down for someone to say. If that's the only argument that they have, if they have no other argument but that, Sister Rashi, you probably 9 times out of 10 is going to be able to take it to court and get it done through the Supreme Court. So let me tell you, the main thing is reparations is good for the United States economy. It's good for getting these mothers off of MFIB. It's great against crime. It's great for the development into the next century, so that instead of us focusing so much on racism and white supremacy structure, you can take the most creative group that you have, which is African-Americans, ADOS folks, those descendants of slaves, and allow us to use our minds to develop science that can help cure some of these diseases that we're struggling with. If they wouldn't hold us back so much, we probably could have helped them cure COVID a lot sooner, or probably would have never been a COVID, but racism and white supremacy holds us back. So these are the things that I tell people. Hey, when you say all we're going to do is buy Cadillacs, cool. Well, that means you got people that's going to manufacture cars and people got to sell cars. When you say all we're going to do is buy TVs, well, great. That means somebody got a job at Walmart. If all we're going to do is buy Nikes, great. That means that somebody got to sell shoes at Foot Locker. We're keeping people employed. We're keeping manufacturing going. And we're putting that money back into the economy. That's a lot different than these people who put it into trust where they don't pay taxes on anything. They don't put that money into our economy.
Yeah.
They put that money into global economy.
Yeah. Keep going, Brother Barry. They're right. We're going to squander it because they squander it. They have taught us how to squander. They have taught us how to misappropriate funds. We have been taught how to play shell games with our ill-gotten gains. We have been taught that. But what they haven't taught us, tone and be accountable for some shit you had did. The only time they found that they showed us that was the last time I saw a white man atone for what he did was Bernie Madoff. Okay?
What he did?
Maybe Jeffrey Epstein. But ain't nobody making white people deal with the poverty that they create. And so, come on. Let's show some accountability. Make me accountable for some money. Give me some money, enough money to be accountable for. That's our problem.
Here's the caveat, though, Rashi, because this is what we did after George Floyd and DEI jobs and everything. Those things can all work if that's what we focus on. If the focus turns and it twists and it becomes about the other departments inside of our ethnicity, inside of our race, then we allow ourselves to be distracted. We allow them to pick winners and losers, and then we don't get reparations. Then we get internal strife, we get internal conflict versus internal resolution. So we have to be careful, because they showed what they was going to do right after George Floyd. When they put all that money into Black Lives Matter, and see, this is why I'm glad I'm on this with you today, so we can break this down. We got a little bit of time to go in depth, and you can rebut this too if you want. I want to hear what you got to say. But when they went and took the George Floyd situation and the death of all of these other brothers, and then they flipped it and they said, "Well, we're gonna put money in talking about the policing of Black folks, but we're gonna talk about the murder of transgenders," that took away from the discussion, because that's not the police target. We know what the police target is, right? But you see what they did? You took the death of one group, you funded another group, and now those groups are going at each other's necks over some money, when at the end of the day, it shouldn't have went that way. It should have been, if you're targeting Black folks, you're just targeting Black folks, no matter what their sexual orientation or gender status is. Does that make sense?
So, I got this homegirl, right, and she is she's a government, and I'm talking about high-up government, appointed, like, watch person for the trans community. She deal with, like, states that refuse to do the hormone treatment, right? She
mm-hmm.
deal with, like, the suicide rate of children who have verbalized that they feel like they were born in the wrong body. You know, you hear what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? She kind of deal
yeah.
with that. And so what she told me was that they don't kill white trannies. They only kill, they kill Mexican. Okay, black people, like trannies of color. Okay, am I saying that right? People of color who identify as trans have a higher rate of incidents of violence than white trans people. Because white trans people are able to affiliate in groups that accept them more than trans people of color are. Trans people of color still have to stay in their people of color community. And when people of color get ready to hate, they have no barriers to physically harming non-binary people in their community, meaning the easiest person to hurt, easiest person to kill, rob, beat up, and molest in our black community are our trans population. And since we as a ethno-nation have anti-trans, anti-gay sentiment so high up on our list of priorities, it is actually more dangerous to be a gay trans of color who stays within the population of people he was from than it is to be a white trans who stays amongst the population of people they from. Now, when white trans people start slumming and they find themselves kicking it with trans people of color, they heighten their propensity to be victims, not perpetrators. Do you hear me what I'm saying, Brother Barry?
Hey.
So, when you talk about we tolerant and we love, I need you to hear that that does, in fact, have a limit within the black population. And while we do not so much hate women of color who identify themselves more as being men of color, we don't hate them that much. We just kind of laugh at them. What people of color hate more, and I'm saying that as black, I have to say that through the life. I'm saying people of color because I'm saying Latino. I'm saying the Filipinos, even the Koreans. I'm talking about black people. You hear me what I'm saying, Brother Barry? When they come kicking with us, when non-colored people come kicking with us and they trans, possibility of being hurt with those trans of color, okay? So her work, my friend, Dr. Poteet, is to address something in the Latino and African-American and African culture where we feel like at, you know, believe it or not, most trans people get killed at night. They don't say that. They don't. It's something about it. Because she's compiling the statistics, right?
Oh, I've seen the data.
Most trans people get hurt at night. Most trans people are hurt by men. Women do not. Mm-hmm. Women do not necessarily feel compelled to hurt. Most of the people who are hurt are men identifying as women.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, as a member, not of the trans community, but of a member of the community where I want people to be able to identify with their lives in the way that their brain has perceived it works best. Okay? Not necessarily as the group around them decides it works, but their individual brains have decided this is what works best for me. Okay? As a person. This is the only way I can live my life and not try to kill myself, Brother Barry. You hear me?
Right. No, I hear you.
This expression of self, it's either this what I'm doing or no life at all.
Well, let me ask you this question, because what I hear you, but what I stated earlier, I saw in the data, the more of the breakdown is that most of those men who are harming transgender folk are typically engaged in a sexual relationship with transgender folk.
Okay, the download Daryl, okay?
So that doesn't make, so Daryl himself would be, even though he's unadmittedly saying he is gay, part of his rage is to keep the secret, which in our community he would automatically become gay. So that
now,
is
he's
the gay.
Accepted the womanness of the person.
No, he
has accepted the expression of femininity that he is getting
secretly
from the person he likes.
Secretly he has. Secretly. But consciously he has. Subconsciously he has not. It's when the subconscious creeps up with the conscious and the idea that this is going to come out, that's when the violent pattern of killing these folks take place. So while I hear about the dangers, I believe that's true. I also believe that it needs to be talked more that it's not heterosexual men who don't have a relationship with transgenders. So they're not just doing it because you had a sex change or you identify as a woman now. These are people who are typically in relationships or have a relationship with some other transgender who are attacking and killing these folks.
So what you want to say is, it's not the cis, the cis hetero.
I don't know if he's thinking,
look at this fag and beating the fag to death. That's not it. You're saying it was down low,
yeah.
Daryl. And he's afraid he's not going to be as low. He ain't going to be able to be as low as he been. And that this person that he happens to care for, he happens to legitimately care for, but he's afraid of the reality. Now that other person has to die.
Yes, because they are the most dangerous. It was a thing on social media about 2 years ago, maybe three, could be longer. The sister from Indianapolis who walked in on this big-time drug dealer and some other guy that she know having sex. She filmed it. She went live with it, hopped in a car, was talking about it, and was like, I always knew it, this, and this. And, you know, that guy ambushed and killed her within 20 minutes of their life because people don't want to be outed. They want their secrets to be, so they ain't fully accepted what it is that they're engaging in. But also, it doesn't make sense to say that these are heterosexual men doing this, because they're not. These are people that kind of float in that community. If you're not like me, I'm a heterosexual male. I have no reason to want to harm a transsexual anything because we don't even operate in the same circles. We're not around each other. We don't eat at the same dinner tables. We don't go to the same clubs. Why would I all of a sudden just pick this person out and just start beating on them or welling on them? They've done nothing to me. They haven't caused me no harm. They don't threaten my manhood. Men are already competitive, and we think that we're more alpha than the other. If someone is tapping out and clearly saying that, hey, I'm the feminine one, well, why do we need to beat you down? In our mind, you've already beat yourself down. We're going to keep on moving. Predators, you know, apex predators don't hunt the sick in their minds. right? Or they don't hunt the weakest of the weak. They at least want it to be a thrill. Because you laying there and your leg already broke, they're not just going to come up and start savages and eat you. They don't do that. In the wild, yeah, do they attack the babies? Yes, they do. But typically the baby can still run. So that's how I look at that. And that data and that information has to be broken down more so we can really study why are these men having these rage impacts. And one last point, I used to work at a group home. I was a supervisor at a group home, right? So I had this young man, I forgot the brother's name, but he was gay, and he had HIV. And this dude, man, he was a trip because we all knew he had AIDS inside of the place. And he would come back, you know, my staff would call me. It would always be the Saturday or Sunday that I'm off. He would bring these men that clearly live in heterosexual, normative lives, but were married. One guy was like 6'5", man. My staff was scared to put the man out, so they called me, and I had to show up to put the man out. And, I mean, he would bring these guys in. But I would always say if they ever found out he had AIDS, right, or HIV, I'm sorry, and not only did he have HIV, but also that these men were married in relationships and he threatened for that to come out, man, they were gonna harm him physically. They were going to harm him violently. And so that's the side that I don't think that we talk about. Like, it's not them being threatened by people in our community based on. Now, do I believe that the epithets are still being slurred, Adam? The slurred epithets? Yeah. Because when you have young men in our community who don't necessarily know how to stand in their own comfort, I can see them saying slurs or cussing them out in that way. But when you talk about mature men and mature women, we ain't got no time for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, Brother Barry, you know, I know we started late, but we covered quite a bit of ground. We were not able quite to get to the discussion I wanted to get to. Hopefully we can do it next week. And
sure,
I wanted to discuss discuss prison. I want to discuss, I feel like we got a whole bunch of people headed for prison, but I don't think they understand. One of the things that had got me this week was our discussion on the Kia boys. I don't think people know that there's a national epidemic of joyriders trying to, you know, trying to kill, you know, or trying to get into car wreck. We got so much to discuss, but ultimately the end game is prison, right? We need to have a better expose on what is that reality, what is prison, where does the money come from, who are being detained, who's in the prison, what is the process even? Because most of our youth, and even though they may not be listening to us, I'm pretty sure we have people who do not understand the process of being detained and then incarcerated and sentenced and then charged and then sentenced and then having and then what the behavior is going to have to be from there. And I would like for us to talk to our listeners about it, because for one, we're building more prisons as we speak. We would think that it's a dying idea because of how less crime they saying is in the nation, but when all these random mass shootings, with all these random robberies, we got a rash of robberies in the country, we got a rash of human trafficking and kidnapping happening, we're going to have to find somewhere, if we do eventually catch these people, where do we put them? And so I would like to for us to discuss in depth incarceration, who's getting incarcerated, who to call if you feel like you've been wrongly incarcerated, and then, you know, things like the Innocence Project and what it means to be exonerated and what that process looks like. I'd like for us to do a show where we discuss the prison industrial complex, and hopefully we can get that done here within the month of June.
Well, Sister Rashi, I know we only got a couple minutes left, so let me say this. I agree. I would love to have that discussion. Look forward to it. I do have suggestions, and what I would say about the Kia boys on the local level is just simply that we are in a situation where we should be thinking about, instead of locking people up alternative ways, and I'm talking about things such as getting these young men and women into trade schools, allowing them folks to be able to be integrated, have a right to decency inside of this country, versus locking them up in prisons where they'll never be able to turn their life around and they always have that stigma. Well, we got at least a little bit less than 2 minutes left to go, so I'm open to it. Hopefully Brother Levon and Brother Roddy will be on and we have a full discussion, bring some inmates in, have that conversation, as well as some therapists to say exactly what they see, what we need to do. Some of these experts need to chime in, these black experts especially, because the only time they seem to want to chime in is when white folks give them permission to, or when they get to make some money off the book.
Oh, well. Well, Brother Barry, it has been an enlightening discussion. I'm sad that we didn't get the words of Brother Rodney today, because, you know, he's always, you know, the beacon of truth and enlightenment. But next week, all right, same time next week. What you say, Brother Barry?
All right, man, same time next week. I appreciate it. And in the words of Levon, if nobody told you that they love you, we love you, and peace.
Peace.